and the differences may not have to do only with intake of omega-3 fatty acids. Despite my enthusiasm for fish, I have two serious concerns about recommending that people eat more of it. The first has to do with the environmental toxins it contains, including mercury and polychlorinated biphenyls, the carcinogens usually referred to simply as PCBs, the result of pollution of lakes, rivers, and oceans. The second is the possibility of losing fish as a natural resource by overfishing those same bodies of water. Take salmon as an example. Almost all of the salmon served today is farmed. Atlantic salmon. Farmed salmon has less flavor, less protein, and more fat than wild salmon, and its content of omega-3 fatty acids may not be as high. It likely also contains residues of pesticides, antibiotics, and other drugs used to control diseases that occur when fish are crowded together in pens of fish farms. Those diseases may spread from the pens and decimate wild populations of salmon. Most people assume that fish farming is the answer to an endangered resource. Few know that it degrades the environment and that it takes several pounds of feed fish to produce 1 pound of salmon. The net result of salmon farming is greatly accelerated depletion of the numbers of fish in the oceans. I happen to like wild Alaskan salmon a lot and will give you my favorite ways of preparing it at the end of this section. See page 57. Wild salmon tastes better and is more nutritious, and eating it does not have the environmental impact of eating farmed salmon, nor the health risks associated with it. As for other fish, be aware that larger, more carnivorous species are more likely to contain dangerous levels of contaminants. I avoid swordfish, marlin, shark, bluefish, and king mackerel for that reason. The size of the fish definitely correlates with its toxic load. If you must eat albacore tuna, try to get it from suppliers who buy small fish. See appendix. The same goes for halibut. I also avoid grouper, black sea bass, rockfish, and most snapper because those species are endangered from overfishing. Cod, pollock, flounder, halibut, sole, and plaice are still relatively abundant in the Pacific, but seriously depleted in the Atlantic. Finally, skate, rockfish, Chilean sea bass, and orange roughy are threatened because they do not spawn until they are old, 30 years in the case of orange roughy, and unless they are managed well, they will be overfished to depletion. Species that are still abundant and well-managed include wild Alaskan salmon, herring, sardines, anchovies, mackerel, mahi-mahi, Alaskan halibut, and Pacific albacore. Try to keep these distinctions in mind if you want to continue to enjoy eating fish. Sardines are still a safe omega-3 source. I love fresh sardines, grilled with nothing but salt and lemon juice, and I'm happy to see them increasingly available. I used to be able to get them only in better Greek and Italian restaurants. Of course, you can buy canned sardines in any supermarket. Water-packed brands are lower in calories. If you get an oil-packed variety, preferably with sardine or olive oil, drain off as much oil as you can before using the fish. I mash canned sardines, then add mustard and onion to make a tasty spread. Give that a try. It's an easy way to get fatty fish into your diet. You can also buy fish oil supplements in drugstores and health food stores in both liquid and encapsulated forms. Better fish oil supplements are distilled to remove contaminants, and I recommend them. They are an acceptable alternative to eating oily fish. Research suggests that some people may benefit from taking fish oil supplements in addition to eating fish. Those with autoimmune or inflammatory disorders, heart disease, diabetes or insulin resistance, and mental or emotional disorders like depression and bipolar disorder. Because these supplements can affect blood clotting, avoid them if you're taking any anticoagulant drugs like Coumadin, warfarin, have had a hemorrhagic stroke, or are scheduled for surgery. If you are a vegetarian, look for omega-3 supplements made from algae, see appendix, or consider adding freshly ground flax seeds to your diet. They are an inexpensive and convenient source of the fatty acids you want. Buy whole, organic flax seeds at a natural food store. Keep them in the refrigerator and grind a half cup or so at a time using a blender or coffee grinder. Ground flax has a nutty taste that is quite good added to cereal, salads, potatoes, rice, or cooked vegetables. A tablespoon of the meal once a day will give you a good ration of omega-3s. Be aware that flax seeds are high in fiber and will increase the bulk of your stools. In some individuals, they may exert a laxative effect. Most people find this effect welcome, but some do not. If it bothers you, eat less. You will see dark plastic bottles of flaxseed oil in the refrigerator and freezer cases of natural food stores. I think flax meal is preferable, as it is less expensive and tastier. Flax oil oxidizes very readily, and unless it is handled and packed with great care, develops the unpleasant taste of oil paint, a sign of rancidity and hardly a welcome addition to food. Other specialty oils that provide omega-3s but are not yet generally available come from the seeds of hemp, chia, and hops. Canola and soy oils are the only common vegetable oils that have omega-3s, though not nearly as much as flax. Walnuts are another vegetarian omega-3 source. You can eat one or two handfuls a day, or look for walnut oil in specialty food stores and use it in salads. The only vegetable that contains omega-3s is purslane, Portulacea oleracea, which is sometimes eaten as a wild green here, but more commonly despised by gardeners as an invasive weed. In other parts of the world, people cultivate purslane and like it as a vegetable. Greeks often add it to soups, for example, and some experts think it contributes to the heart healthiness of Mediterranean diets. Specialty seed catalogs offer improved varieties of purslane for home gardens. If you like to produce some of your own food, consider this easy-to-grow creeping plant with small, succulent leaves. Here are some recipes to help you implement the dietary recommendations of this first week of the program. Broccoli. Here is my preferred preparation of this wonderfully healthful vegetable. 1 large bunch broccoli. 1 tablespoon extra virgin olive oil. Salt to taste. Several cloves garlic, chopped. Red pepper flakes to taste. Optional. 1. Trim the bottoms of the broccoli stalks and discard. Cut off the main stem of each stalk, peel it to beneath the fibrous layer, and cut the flesh into edible chunks. Separate the head of broccoli into bite-sized pieces and peel a bit of the skin from the small stems to make them more tender. 2. Wash the broccoli in cold water. Drain it and place in a pot with 1/4 cup cold water, the olive oil, salt to taste, and the garlic. Add a pinch or more of the hot red pepper flakes if you want a spicy dish. 3. Bring to a boil, cover tightly, and let steam until the broccoli is bright green and very crunchy tender, no more than 5 minutes. Remove with a slotted spoon and serve at once. You can also add the broccoli, with any remaining liquid, to cooked pasta. I prefer penne or rigatoni, seasoning with grated Parmesan cheese if you like. Serves 4. Grilled or broiled salmon. Marinade. 1 cup sake. 1/2 cup natural soy sauce or tamari, 1 tablespoon grated fresh ginger root, 2 cloves fresh garlic smashed, 1 tablespoon dark brown sugar. Salmon fillets, allow 6 ounces per person, lemon wedges, optional. 1. Prepare the marinade by mixing the sake, Japanese rice wine, the natural soy sauce, a reduced sodium variety if you prefer, the ginger, the garlic, and the dark brown sugar. 2. Rinse the salmon fillets under cold water, place in a glass or ceramic dish, and pour the marinade over. Cover and let marinate in the refrigerator for 1 to 3 hours, spooning the liquid over any exposed parts of the fish once or twice. 3. Prepare the grill or preheat the broiler to high heat. 4. Drain the fish and place on foil on the grill or rack in oven. Cook until desired doneness, but do not overcook. Serve at once, with lemon wedges if you like. makes a great meal with rice and a cooked vegetable or salad. One serving per fillet. Easy poached salmon. Salmon fillets, allow 6 ounces per person, 1 carrot, sliced, 1 small onion, sliced, 1 stalk celery, sliced, 2 slices lemon, several sprigs of parsley, 6 bay leaves, Turkish if possible, salt to taste, 1 cup dry white wine, juice of 1/2 lemon. 1. Cut the salmon fillets into individual portions. 2. Place in a saucepan the carrot, onion, celery, lemon, parsley, and bay leaves, Turkish, not California. If you have California bay leaves, use 1/2 a large leaf. 3. Add the fish, cold water to cover, salt to taste, the wine, and the lemon juice. Bring the pot to a boil, uncovered. 4. Adjust heat to simmer and let fish cook for 5 minutes. 5. Turn off heat and leave fish undisturbed for 10 minutes. Then remove it carefully to a serving platter. The salmon will be perfectly done. It is delicious served either hot or cold. 1 serving per fillet. Salmon in parchment. This is an easy and elegant main dish preparation. It requires cooking parchment, which you will find in rolls or sheets at many supermarkets and most kitchen supply stores. Thin spaghetti, extra virgin olive oil, salt, fresh dill or parsley chopped, fresh vegetables, see procedure below, salmon fillet, Dijon mustard, baking parchment. 1. Heat oven to 400 degrees Fahrenheit. 2. Cook thin spaghetti until just done, al dente. Drain, toss with a bit of olive oil, salt, and chopped fresh dill. Use parsley if dill is not available. 3. Prepare a garnish of fresh vegetables, carrot and zucchini matchsticks, asparagus tips, snow or snap pea pods, etc. 4. Rinse salmon fillet, cut in individual portions, and pat dry. Spread the top of each one with Dijon mustard. 5. For each person, place a serving of pasta on a sheet of parchment, top with a salmon fillet, add the vegetables, and twist the corners of the parchment together to seal into a pouch. 6. Place the pouches in the middle of the hot oven and bake for 10 minutes. Serve immediately in the sealed pouches, opening them just before eating. 1 serving per fillet. Dr. Andrew Weil's favorite low-fat salad dressing. Seasoned rice wine vinegar, see note below, dark roasted sesame oil, 1 clove garlic, optional. Note: seasoned rice wine vinegar can be bought in a Japanese grocery store or the Asian food section of a supermarket. It is seasoned with sugar and salt. Avoid brands that contain MSG, monosodium glutamate. You can also buy plain rice wine vinegar and season it yourself with sugar or honey and salt to taste. 1. Pour enough vinegar over prepared salad greens in a serving bowl to coat them lightly. 2. Add a teaspoon of dark roasted sesame oil. Its flavor is so intense that a little goes a remarkably long way. 3. Toss well and serve. This couldn't be easier. For variety, you can try adding a clove of garlic, crushed, to the vinegar before you pour it over the greens. Supplements. This week you are to begin taking the antioxidant, multivitamin, multimineral supplement that I have formulated. See the appendix for details of your vitamin and mineral needs and products I recommend. I will discuss the 5 elements of the antioxidant formula in the coming weeks, beginning now with vitamin C. Maybe you already take vitamin C and other dietary supplements. If you do not, here are the reasons to begin doing so. Almost all animals make vitamin C in their bodies. Only human beings, other primates, and a very few other species have lost this ability and need to get the vitamin every day from dietary sources, principally fresh fruits and vegetables. You need certain levels of vitamin C to build strong connective tissue. including the linings of coronary arteries, and to allow the healing system to repair wounds. Although I believe that higher doses can encourage healing on all levels, as well as help the body protect itself from oxidative damage by free radicals, research suggests the body can use only 200 to 250 milligrams of vitamin C a day. As an example of vitamin C's effect on the healing system, let me tell the story of the older brother of a friend of mine who underwent surgery for removal of portions of his stomach and esophagus. Before he entered the hospital, he asked me what he could do to speed his recovery, and I gave him two standard recommendations. First, I told him to get permission from the anesthesiologist to wear a headset during the operation and have an audio tape made of suggestions for success of the surgery and a rapid recovery with minimal pain. This would serve to block out any conversations in the operating room that might put unwanted ideas in his mind, and it would take advantage of the mind's influence on the healing system in a state when the unconscious mind accepts suggestions. My second recommendation was to tell his surgeon that he wanted high doses of vitamin C put into his intravenous drip from the time he went into surgery until the IV was removed, 20 grams every 24 hours. I also told him that in my experience, most hospitals will not honor such a request. This patient took an aggressive stance with his doctors and insisted on the intravenous vitamin C. When the surgeon examined him several days after the operation, he told the patient that he had never seen such rapid healing from a surgical wound and was so impressed that he would begin ordering IV vitamin C in all of his cases. Supplemental vitamin C is non-toxic, but the body cannot use high doses, more than several hundred milligrams a day. People who take megadoses of this vitamin eventually reach a level of bowel tolerance, marked initially by flatulence and then by loose stools and diarrhea. You certainly want to stay below this level. I used to recommend large amounts of vitamin C, up to several grams a day, but am now convinced that the body cannot use more than 250 milligrams a day, as I suggested before. Since vitamin C increases absorption of iron, high doses can be dangerous for people with iron overload disease, hemochromatosis, a rare inherited condition that can be diagnosed with a simple blood test. Otherwise, the only problems associated with excess vitamin C are those I have mentioned. Do not use sweet, chewable tablets of vitamin C, bad for the teeth, hard tablets, may not dissolve, time-release forms, unnecessary, or fancy brands that are very expensive. Do not expect immediate effects from vitamin C, although it may decrease the frequency of colds and reduce easy bruising in some people. You are taking it as part of a long-range strategy to protect your healing system and enhance its functioning so it will be able to maintain your day-to-day well-being and be ready to serve you in case of illness. I would also like you to be aware of new research on vitamin D. Although it is not an antioxidant and not even a vitamin, it is actually a hormone, it has widespread and critically important functions in the body, including prevention of multiple sclerosis, lung cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, and osteoporosis. The body can make vitamin D with exposure to sunlight, but most people do not make enough. And sunscreens block vitamin D synthesis. Most people are deficient in vitamin D, and most multivitamins provide far too little, usually 200 to 400 IU, international units, often of the less usable form, vitamin D2, ergocalciferol. I strongly recommend that everyone take supplemental vitamin D3, cholecalciferol, at least 1,000 IU a day. There is no toxicity at this level, and it still may not be enough. Take vitamin D with a meal containing fat to ensure absorption. Exercise. Exercise is a key component of a healthy lifestyle. You cannot enjoy optimal health and healing if you are sedentary. You may have heard that walking is the best exercise. It's true, and I'm asking you to do a lot of it in this 8-week program. Here are the advantages of walking. You already know how to do it. You can do it anywhere. It requires no equipment, just a good pair of shoes. It carries the least risk of injury of any form of exercise. It can provide a complete workout equal to or better than any other activity. It will satisfy all your exercise requirements throughout your life, even into old age. Many fitness buffs look down on walking as being tame compared with running, playing competitive sports, or driving oneself to sweaty exhaustion on stationary bicycles and other aerobic torture devices. It's not so. I have seen people attain maximum fitness through walking alone. They did it conscientiously and regularly, and did enough of it to take full advantage of its wonderful conditioning effect on the body. And they use no other form of physical activity to get to their goal. I have also seen very obese people reach their optimal weights in several months by walking every day in combination with sensible dietary modification. See pages 249 to 254 for details. My preference is to walk outside in beautiful surroundings. But if I'm in a city, I will gladly walk around in it as much as possible, and if I encounter bad weather, I might just walk back and forth in a shopping mall or try to find a gym where I can walk on a treadmill. For maximum cardiovascular benefit, you should try to include some uphill walking. Long, moderate, sustained grades are terrific, or walk fast enough to get your heart rate up. You can buy a miniature heart rate monitor to wear like a wristwatch, along with a band that straps around your chest. Or you can learn to take your pulse at the wrist for 15 seconds and multiply by 4 to get beats per minute. The target heart rate zone, THRZ, in which maximal aerobic conditioning takes place and fat burning occurs, can be calculated by a not-too-complicated formula. First, determine your predicted maximal heart rate, PMHR. For physically inactive men and women of any activity level, the PMHR is 220 minus your age. For physically active men and women, it is 205 minus your age. THRZ is then 65 to 75% of your PMHR. For example, when I wrote this book, I was 54 and physically active, so my PMHR was 151. My THRZ was 98 to 113. And a 15-second pulse rate in this zone would be one-quarter of those figures, or 24 to 28. In general, if you are exercising above your THRZ, you will be too aerobically stressed to carry on a conversation. And if you are exercising below it, you will not notice your heart and breathing going significantly faster than normal. Sometimes I like to walk alone and be with my thoughts and nature. Sometimes I like to walk with a friend and pass the time in conversation. Sometimes I carry a portable CD player and listen to spirited music with a beat that keeps my feet moving quickly. iPod and CD players have transformed walking for many. I know people who like to listen to books on tape or foreign language lessons while they do their daily walks. I've asked you to begin this practice with a 10-minute daily walk. If you are already walking this much or more, keep at it, and I want you to do it even if you have some other exercise routine, because I feel that walking offers benefits that other forms of activity do not, such as conditioning rhythms in the brain in response to the coordinated motions of the arms and legs. If you are not used to walking, be sure to wear the right shoes. I recommend shoes designed specifically for walking, with good cushioning in the insole. Many brands and expert advice are available at athletic supply stores. You will also find special double-layer socks that prevent blisters and wick away perspiration from your feet. Think about where you are going to walk and when, and how you are going to build this activity into your daily routine. I like to take morning walks before breakfast, but if I miss the chance, I'm just as happy to walk at the end of the day. In the next few weeks, as walking time increases, I will give you more information about this key component of the 8-week program. Mental, spiritual. The recommendations that fall under this heading are most important. If you have read my earlier writings on health, you know that I am a strong proponent of mind-body medicine, who believes that illness in the physical body is often the result of imbalance in the mind or the spiritual realm. For your healing system to function optimally, you must address those areas of your being as well as look after the needs of your body. I will ease you into this area of work with practices that are gentle and interesting, that I think you will enjoy, and that, despite their simplicity, are profoundly effective. This week, I have asked you to think about your own experiences of healing, from any recent illnesses, injuries, or problems, emotional as well as physical. I want you to focus your attention on healing, because the way to experience more of something you want is to become more conscious of it. If you like to keep journals or diaries, you might want to get a notebook in which to record these experiences and new ones. It is a way to build up confidence in the power of spontaneous healing inside you. Next, I have asked you to begin working with your breath, a practice that will develop as you progress through the 8-week program. I have written extensively about the healing power of breath in other books. Suffice it to say that breath is the link between the body and mind, and between the conscious and unconscious mind. It is the master key to the control of emotions and to the operations of the involuntary nervous system. Moreover, breath represents the movement of spirit in matter. Turning your attention to your breath moves you naturally toward relaxation and meditation and puts you in conscious touch with your vital, non-physical essence. The very simplest technique of breath work is simply to observe it. To do nothing other than follow the breath cycle with your observing mind, without trying to influence it in any way. Here are the formal instructions. 1. Sit in a comfortable position with your back straight and your eyes lightly closed, having loosened any tight clothing. 2. Focus your attention on your breathing, and follow the contours of the cycle through inhalation and exhalation, noting, if you can, the points at which one phase changes into the other. Do this for 5 minutes, once a day. Your goal is simply to keep your attention on the breath cycle and observe. No matter how the breath changes, even if the excursions become very small, just continue to follow them. This is a basic form of meditation, a relaxation method, and a way to begin to harmonize body, mind, and spirit. Finally, this week I have asked you to buy some fresh flowers to keep in your home, where you can enjoy them. I do not think much commentary is required. Flowers manifest the beauty and wonder of nature and delight the senses. It feels good to be around them. They raise our spirits. That is all the information you need to go through the first week of the 8-week program. A Healing Story. The Value of Supplements. Here is a short, happy story from Patty Lewis of Tempe, Arizona. I have followed your recommendations for vitamins and nutrients. By doing so, my recovery from breast cancer was a positive healing experience. Breast cancer forever changed my life. Before the diagnosis, I never gave much thought or effort to building up my immune system. I was healthful, so it wasn't important. Now I take very good care of myself and follow your practical common sense approach to good health. The supplements kept me healthy throughout the cold and flu season, even though my immune system had been zapped by chemotherapy. They played a key role in keeping my mind, body, and spirit in balance. My spirits remained high as I recovered, and I was able to find humor in everything. I continued riding my bike as I recovered, which kept me fit and happy. Friends and family would shake their heads and marvel at how well I did. Your recommendations were worth their weight in gold. I will continue on the supplements and look forward to a long, healthful, and happy life. Chapter 6, Week 2. Projects. Find out where your drinking water comes from, if you do not know, and what impurities it might contain. Stop drinking chlorinated water. Get information about a water purifying system for your home, if you do not have one. In the meantime, buy bottled water. Diet. Again, eat fish at least once this week and broccoli twice. Try to increase your consumption of whole grains. Choose whole grain breads or cereals, for example, or try any of the recipes for grain dishes that you will find here, beginning on page 78. Go to a natural food store and look through the frozen and refrigerated sections to familiarize yourself with the many different products made from soybeans. Select one to try. Buy some Japanese or Chinese green tea and try it. If you drink coffee or black tea, try to substitute green tea for some or all of your usual beverage. Supplements. Start taking one capsule a day of mixed carotenes with breakfast. The product should provide 10,000 to 15,000 IU of beta-carotene along with related compounds such as alpha-carotene, lutein, and zeaxanthin. It must also contain lycopene to give you the full benefits of this family of natural pigments. Exercise. Increase your daily walk to 15 minutes. Mental spiritual. Visit a park or some other favorite place in nature. Spend as much time as you can there, doing nothing in particular, just feeling the energy of the place. Try a one-day news fast. Do not read, watch, or listen to any news for a day. Continue with breath observation for 5 minutes a day, and add a second breathing exercise. For 1 minute a day, try to experience the breath cycle, beginning with exhalation and ending with inhalation. Details of the begin with exhalation exercise appear on page 84. Optional. Pay attention to your mental imagery and make a few notes about the kind of images that have a strong, positive emotional impact on you. Think about how you might adapt them to use in healing visualizations. Commentary. Projects. Drinking water is one of the major sources of environmental toxins that can harm your immune and healing systems. Fortunately, it is one that you can do something about. According to recent reports, drinking water in the United States remains a health risk, whether you live in a big city or a rural area. More than 100 million Americans drink water that contains significant levels of three cancer-causing chemicals, arsenic, radon, and chlorine byproducts, trihalomethanes or THMs. Nitrates, which can cause deadly blue baby syndrome when infant formula is made with tap water polluted with these, have been found at excessive levels in more than 2,000 water systems in 40 states in the last decade. Rural areas with significant agricultural runoff are in the most danger. In addition to chemical contamination, chlorine-resistant viruses and parasites such as Cryptosporidium, Giardia, and the Norwalk virus can slip through the more than 1,000 large water systems in this country still lacking proper filters. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, almost 1 million people become sick in the United States each year from waterborne microorganisms. In my opinion, chlorine is itself a major health risk and should be phased out in favor of safer methods of disinfection, such as ozonation. Besides forming THMs when it reacts with organic compounds, chlorine by itself is a strong oxidizing agent that may promote coronary heart disease and damage body defenses. In response to the degraded quality of our drinking water, the laws governing water treatment are changing. Although many feel the current regulations remain inadequate and enforcement methods are ineffective owing to underfunding, safe levels of contamination are simply set too high, and not enough of the proven contaminants are regulated. Only about 60 of the 700 dangerous chemicals found regularly in our drinking water. The Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, has made great strides in the last decade, and in the late 1990s revised the testing protocols for radium and uranium. significant changes were made regarding the filtration for cryptosporidium in early 2006, and new regulations regarding the monitoring of chlorine byproducts will come into effect in 2009. However, water suppliers routinely fail to meet the EPA standards, and they may not notify customers when water is found to be contaminated, even though the law requires them to do so. Here are my suggestions for what to do, given the situation we face. Never drink water that tastes of chlorine, even if it means going thirsty. Order bottled water if you are out, or carry a portable carbon filter, see appendix for a source, that filters a glass at a time, removing chlorine and other bad tastes. If you buy water from a water company, ask for the results of the tests that companies are required to make available. If you are on a private system, have your water tested annually by a laboratory, see appendix. You want to know whether fecal coliform bacteria, lead, fluorine, chlorine, arsenic, nitrates, and hardness fall within safe levels, as well as whether the water contains parasites, other microorganisms, sulfates, herbicides, pesticides, and any other contaminants that might occur in your area. Use water drawn from your tap, so any pollutants, such as lead, that may be leaching from your pipes will be detected. Test the water at a different time each year, since some pollutants, nitrates, may be present only seasonally. Only the results of water testing can tell you whether you need to buy a purifying system, and if so, what kind. If you get water from a municipal system, be sure to test your tap water for lead, because plumbing inside the house is the major source of lead contamination, and this will not show up in the municipal tests. Water containing more than 10 parts per billion of lead is a health risk, especially for infants, children, and pregnant women, but probably for everyone else as well. Flush your pipes daily by letting water run for 3 to 5 minutes in the morning, or after any periods of disuse, before drinking any or using it to prepare food. First draw water, because it may have a higher concentration of lead and other contaminants, is more dangerous. Never use hot tap water for drinking or cooking. It is unfit for human consumption because impurities from plumbing and the insides of hot water tanks more readily leach out through it. Bottled water is, at best, a temporary solution to the drinking water problem. It is much too expensive for regular use, and you cannot count on its safety. Much bottled water is tap water in disguise, and even bottled spring water can be contaminated. In 1990, for example, benzene, an organic solvent, was found in some bottles of carbonated Perrier water. Cleanliness is the biggest concern because bacteria can breed quickly in unchlorinated water. In one EPA check of 25 bottling plants, serious problems with cleanliness were found at every one. If you use bottled water, ask the manufacturer for information about the source of the water and the results of testing. When you find a reliable source, have the water delivered directly to your home, or buy it at stores that have good turnover. Keep the water out of sunlight and use it quickly. To minimize chemical contamination from containers, get water in glass or clear plastic jugs, not the soft, opaque, white plastic ones used for milk, whose material leaches into the water. A home purifying system is a good investment in your health, but if you need one, based on the results of water tests, you must do some homework to decide what kind you require. You may be able to get by with a simple device that removes bad tastes and odors, but you will probably need a system that uses more than one technology to remove organic chemicals, heavy metals, nitrates, and bacteria. Recently, I've become aware of two specific filtration systems that look good, one for distilling water and another that uses multiple barrier filtration technology. Distillers are the best bet in the long run. They remove almost all contaminants, leaving only pure water, and require minimal maintenance, but the initial costs are considerable. The new system for distilling water at home, called D3, does a better job than earlier ones. It can be mounted under the sink, works silently, always produces cool water. Some distillation systems produce hot water when the unit is replenishing its storage reserve, and is self-sterilizing. The D3 comes with a built-in pump, automatic drain, and all the hoses, fixtures, and extras that end up adding to the price of other purification systems. Although the system is pricey, about $2,200 installed, the cost works out over time to be much less than that of bottled water. In the past, distillation seemed impractical for home use. Distillers were large, loud, and required quite a lot of electricity, water, and maintenance. But I've always recommended distilled water as the purest form. Still, some critics claim it's unhealthy. They say that the process removes minerals and that distilled water can leach minerals from our bodies. However, I believe that our primary sources of minerals are fruits and vegetables, not drinking water. In fact, our bodies have very active systems for holding onto the minerals we need. Distillation may also fail to remove some volatile organic compounds, VOCs, that boil at about the same temperature as water. But virtually all distillers now have inline carbon filters to remove VOCs. For more information about the new distilling system, see the appendix. The other attractive system uses multiple barrier technology to produce biologically pure water. This system is the only one of its kind to surpass the EPA standards and protocols for testing microbiological purifiers. It uses a 7-step process to remove bacteria, viruses, parasites, metals, chemicals, and pesticides. And unlike UV and distillation systems, it requires no electricity, so it can continue working in the event of a power outage. The first step in the process is a pre-filter used to reduce larger particles and sediment, which is then followed by a reverse osmosis membrane that removes heavy metals, compounds, and parasitic cysts. Other biological filters in the system remove bacteria and viruses, while a carbon block post-filter removes remaining tastes, odors, and VACs. A special lead-free faucet completes the delivery of biologically pure water. This system provides about 20 gallons of drinking water daily under average usage conditions by a typical family of four. 4 gallons of drinking water per person per day. It is a bit less expensive than the D3 technology, but not much, costing about $2,000 with installation. To learn more about this new technology, see the appendix. Don't rely on free tests offered by the companies selling purifiers. They are not thorough enough. Use an independent laboratory. See the appendix for sources of information about types of water purifiers and buy only a system that meets the standards of NSF International, formerly the National Sanitation Foundation. At this writing, one of the best and most affordable systems uses a combination of two technologies, carbon block filtration and an electrochemical method that exposes water to a copper-zinc alloy called KDF. Under-the-counter systems of this sort cost less than $500 and are easy to maintain. They remove most of the worrisome contaminants, although you may have to add another component to remove nitrates if you live in an area with high agricultural runoff. And KDF puts trace amounts of copper and zinc into the water, which most experts consider beneficial. Buy a system with standard-sized cartridges, so that you will be able to get replacement parts even if the manufacturer goes out of business. Also, choose a system based on the per-gallon cost of the purified water, not on the initial cost. Some systems cost less at first, but are expensive to operate because of energy usage and replacement parts. If you get an under-the-counter model, get a stainless steel faucet, not one made of brass-lead alloy, which can leach lead into the water. Know the maintenance schedule of your system and adhere to it. Filters eventually become exhausted, and bacteria can build up in some systems. Consider buying a meter so you can base cartridge replacements on the number of gallons purified rather than on some time limit. If you purify your water, you may have to rely on fluoride supplements to protect your teeth. Ask your dentist about this. It may seem that I've written too many words on this subject, but I've done it to impress you with the importance of protecting yourself and your healing system from toxins. Those in our food and in the air are not so easy to deal with. water we can all do something about. Diet. Whole grains, containing the germ and bran as well as the starch of staple seed crops, are excellent sources of fiber, which is generally deficient in our diets. Fiber keeps the digestive system running well, helps lower cholesterol, reduces risk of colon cancer, slows absorption of sugar into the bloodstream, and probably does many other good things for our bodies as well, even if researchers do not yet know the details and mechanisms. It is recommended that people eat 40 grams of fiber a day, twice what most of us consume. White flour provides very little of it. You would have to eat 50 loaves of white bread to get your recommended daily allowance from that source alone. The best way to get more fiber is simply to eat more fresh vegetables and fruits, as well as products made from whole grains. Many good-tasting whole grain breakfast cereals are available, both hot and cold, as well as a variety of whole grains that make excellent alternatives to white rice. You can now buy red rice and black rice in addition to short and long grain brown rice, as well as buckwheat groats, kasha, quinoa, and wild rice, now cultivated extensively and much more affordable than it used to be. You don't have to exclude white bread and other refined flour products from your life, just eat fewer of them and more whole grain products along with your vegetables and fruit. This week I want you to learn about the wonders of soybeans. For centuries, the Chinese and Japanese have cultivated soy as a dietary staple, an excellent source of protein that can be turned into multitudinous edibles, from a kind of milk and cheese to foods that are exact facsimiles of animal foods that were prohibited in some Buddhist traditions. Only recently have Westerners begun to discover the delights of soy foods. And only very recently have Western researchers begun to take notice of the contribution of these foods to the low incidence of Western diseases in parts of Asia. Besides being less expensive, soybeans are better than animal foods in several ways. Their protein does not come with a load of saturated fat that will stimulate your liver to make cholesterol, and they provide your digestive tract with fiber. They also contain isoflavones, unusual compounds that may offer significant protection against cancer. These appear to interact with estrogen receptors in the human body, and for that reason, researchers also call them phytoestrogens, meaning plant-derived estrogen-like substances. A number of diseases in women are estrogenically driven. That is, they result from increased production of or exposure to estrogenic hormones, with resultant overgrowth or abnormal growth of cells that respond to them. Fibrocystic changes in breasts, breast cancer, uterine fibroids, and endometriosis are examples of such diseases. Some of these ailments, breast cancer in particular, are increasing at alarming rates throughout the world. One theory explains the rise in terms of increased exposure of women to xenoestrogens, foreign estrogens, not those made by a woman's own ovaries. It is well known that estrogenic hormones are used as growth promoters in animals raised commercially for food. Residues of these hormones find their way into beef, pork, poultry, and dairy products, unless the foods are certified to be free of such chemicals. But a more disturbing possibility is that the environment may be saturated with pollutants that act as xenoestrogens, which enter our bodies and push receptive cells in the direction of increased division and growth and increased risk of malignant transformation. A number of industrial byproducts and pesticides fall into this category. They are now widespread in soil and water. You can do only so much to prevent these toxins from entering your body, but the phytoestrogens in soybeans offer a sound defensive strategy. They may be able to occupy estrogen receptors, activating them only weakly but blocking access by the stronger foreign estrogens. Japanese women on traditional diets had very low rates of breast cancer. I say had because the traditional diet is rapidly becoming a thing of the past, as meat and other Western foods become tremendously popular in Japan. When Japanese women moved to America and ate American diets, their breast cancer rate rapidly rose to equal that of their American counterparts. Medical researchers used to think it was dietary fat that made the difference. The traditional Japanese diet is one of the lowest in fat in the world, whereas Americans get more than a third of their calories from fat. But recent studies cast doubt on the importance of high fat intake as a major risk factor for breast cancer. I think the prominence of soy foods in Japan is more likely to be the key difference. Japanese women also have much less trouble with menopausal symptoms than American women, probably because they get protective phytoestrogens in their diets. And there is reason to think that these compounds afford men protection from prostate cancer, another hormonally driven malignancy, driven in this case by androgens, male sex hormones, which are antagonized by estrogens. Two of the best-studied soy isoflavones are genistein and daidzein. Recently, I've seen these compounds offered for sale in health food stores in pill form, hyped as being the pure magic of soybeans that protects people from cancer. As in the case of sulforaphane, broccoli in a pill, this is just another instance of reductionist thinking. The part is equal to the whole. Whole soybeans and many foods made from them seem to be anti-carcinogenic. It is foolish to think that an isolated component reproduces this effect. A favorite snack in Japan is fresh, whole green soybeans, known as edamame, boiled in their pods in salted water, served cold as appetizers at sushi bars, and eaten at home with beer, much as we eat peanuts in the shell. You pick up a pod and pop the tasty beans directly into your mouth. Traditionally, these were available only in Japan in summer, but I now see frozen edamame in Asian grocery stores here, and you can get them year-round. Please try them. I think you will find them very appealing. In my opinion, one of the healthiest dietary changes people can make is to substitute soy foods for some or all of the animal foods they now eat. To start this process, you need to become familiar with the range of choices available, which is why I ask you this week to do some looking through a natural food store. You will find tofu, tempeh, soy wieners and burgers, lunch meats, and many other products. Some of these are excellent. Some are terrible. You can eat some right out of the package. Others require preparation. For example, tofu is an extremely versatile food, but you cannot just take it home, dump it into a salad, and expect your family to like it. With a little ingenuity and effort, it can be turned into delicious main dishes, spreads, even desserts that do not seem strange at all. The new generation of soy burgers now in stores are so meat-like in appearance and taste that some vegetarians refuse to eat them. Please experiment. Let me give you a few cautions about soy foods. Some, especially soy grits, soy flour, and textured vegetable protein, TVP, can cause terrific flatulence if you are not used to them. In general, these ingredients predominate in old-style soy foods that have been around for years, mostly eaten by groups like Seventh-day Adventists who shun meat. The new kinds of soy foods do not cause this problem. Be aware also that soybeans are high in fat. The fat is polyunsaturated and not harmful from a cardiovascular perspective, which makes substituting soy foods for animal foods a heart-healthy move. Nonetheless, it can add too many fat calories to your diet. Look for reduced-fat tofu and check the fat content of processed foods. Some of the best soy wieners and burgers come in completely fat-free versions that are very tasty. Note that the highly processed products made with isolated soy protein may not deliver the anti-cancer isoflavones. As consumers become more aware of their benefits, manufacturers may begin to add back isoflavones and labels may come to state the content of genistein and daidzein. Finally, whenever possible, try to buy products made from organically grown soybeans. In recent years, many warnings have appeared in the Western press about the purported dangers of soy. These may apply to soy supplements or nutraceuticals spiked with isoflavones. But I do not believe there are concerns about the moderate consumption of whole soy foods. Very large amounts can interfere with thyroid function in some people, and others can be allergic to soy. Even they can build up tolerance by eating small amounts regularly and increasing consumption gradually. Once you find some soy foods that you like, I'm going to ask you to substitute them for some of the animal foods in your diet. For example, try baked pressed tofu, a form of tofu that comes in various flavors, from hickory smoked to teriyaki. This is a form of tofu that you can eat right out of the package. I often slice it up in sandwiches or wraps. I also make what I think is a great version of fajitas by mixing sliced baked tofu with sautéed onions, mushrooms, and peppers. The other experiment I have asked you to conduct this week is to buy and drink some Japanese or Chinese green tea. Green tea is the unfermented leaf of the tea plant, Camellia sinensis. In the preparation of the more familiar black tea, leaves are piled up in heaps and briefly sweated, a natural fermentation process that darkens the leaves and changes their aroma and flavor. Recently, medical researchers have discovered a number of health benefits of tea having to do with its content of polyphenols, catechins. Green tea provides more catechins than black tea because some of the compounds are destroyed during sweating. Oolong tea falls in between, having a color, flavor, and catechin content between that of green and black tea. Catechins lower cholesterol and improve lipid metabolism. They also have significant anti-cancer and antibacterial effects. As news of these remarkable properties of green tea has spread, health food stores have begun to sell it in pill form, which my Japanese friends find laughable. There are even green tea underarm deodorants that rely on its antibacterial properties. All tea contains theophylline, a close relative of caffeine and a natural stimulant. People can become addicted to tea, but not nearly so readily as to coffee. In moderation, say 4 cups a day, green tea, with its delicate aroma and slightly bitter taste, makes a pleasant and healthful addition to the diet. Many grades and qualities of it exist, so shop around to see what pleases you. You will find green tea bags in some supermarkets, but for a more interesting selection, go to Asian grocery stores or any of the specialty tea shops that are now growing in popularity. If you can find it, try matcha, a delicious powdered form of Japanese green tea that is whisked with hot water in a bowl to make a frothy, refreshing beverage. If you drink coffee or cola, try substituting tea. If you already drink black tea, try substituting green. If you do not currently take any caffeine, consider drinking some decaffeinated tea, which still has its catechins. You may even be able to find a decaffeinated form of green tea. Be aware that the ordinary tea bags familiar to most Americans contain distinctly inferior grades of black tea. It is worth investing some time and effort to discover good quality tea that you can enjoy. I learned to drink green tea in Japan and associate it with good times there. When I inhale its subtle fragrance, I am transported to tatami rooms in temples and country inns where I sat on the floor with friends, admiring flower arrangements and artfully served food. The experience is sensual and meditative at the same time, and I know that I am giving my body something that is good for it. Now, here are some recipes for you to try this week. Kasha with vegetables. This recipe features buckwheat groats, kasha, a grain-like staple of Northern Europe and Russia. It is easier to make the dish with toasted buckwheat groats. If you can find only raw ones, you can toast them lightly in a dry skillet over medium heat, stirring frequently. 2 ounces dried mushrooms, 1 cup buckwheat groats, kasha, 1 large carrot sliced, 1 medium onion coarsely chopped, salt or natural soy sauce to taste. 1. Soak the dried mushrooms, shiitake or porcini are very flavorful, in water until soft. Drain, saving the soaking water, and slice, discarding any tough portions. 2. Add the groats to 3 cups of boiling water, including the mushroom soaking liquid, lower heat, and add the carrot, onion, and mushrooms. 3. Cover and simmer until water is absorbed. Add salt or natural soy sauce to taste. Serves 4. Easy miso soup. Miso is a traditional fermented soybean product used every day in Japanese cooking. You will find many varieties of natural miso in the refrigerated cases of health food stores, both stronger flavored dark ones and milder light ones. All are good and keep indefinitely under refrigeration. This soup gives you the benefits of soybeans, along with vegetables and ginger. 2 teaspoons canola oil, 3 slices fresh ginger root, 1 large onion, thinly sliced, 2 carrots, thinly sliced, 2 stalks celery, thinly sliced, 4 cups coarsely chopped cabbage, 4 tablespoons miso, 2 scallions, very thinly sliced, dark roasted sesame oil to taste. 1. Heat the canola oil in a large pot. 2. Add the ginger and the onion, sauté over medium heat for 5 minutes. 3. Add the carrots, celery, and cabbage, stir well. 4. Add 5 cups water, bring rapidly to a boil, then lower heat and simmer, covered, until vegetables are just tender, about 10 minutes. Remove from heat. 5. Place the miso in a bowl, add a little of the broth, and stir well to a smooth cream. Add more broth to thin the mixture, then add it to the pot of soup. Let rest for a few minutes. 6. Serve in bowls with the raw scallions. You may wish to remove the ginger slices before serving, and you can add a few drops of the sesame oil to each bowl if desired. Serves 4 to 6. Tofu salad or sandwich filling. 1 pound block tofu. 1 teaspoon ground turmeric. 1 tablespoon prepared mustard. 1 tablespoon sweet pickle relish. 3 tablespoons chopped celery, 3 tablespoons chopped onion, 1 tablespoon chopped